Greetings on behalf of the Council of Elders. 3 weeks ago, at the February meeting of the Council of Elders, the President and the Home Office Administration team asked the Council to approve a far-reaching proposal based on current and future needs. I would like to take the time in the introduction to today's sermon to explain what prompted their request and explain the Council's response. Over a period of 9 fiscal years, from the fiscal year of 96-97 to 2005-2006, the unrestricted income of the United Church of God grew at a rate of 3.45% compounded annually. In recent times, we've experienced an encouraging acceleration in growth. Over the course of the last fiscal year, the growth in unrestricted income was 7.8% when compared to the previous fiscal year. For the portion of the current fiscal year, 2006-2007, which ended on Friday, March the 2nd, the church's unrestricted income has grown by 9.6% compared to the previous portion of the previous fiscal year. It is apparent to us that God is blessing the United Church of God with significant and encouraging growth in income that is greater than in our earlier times. Growth begets growth. United has never intended, God willing, to do anything but grow. It has never been in our thinking to be a static church, a people sitting, waiting, biding our time until Christ returns. We live by the belief that is contained in the phrase in Matthew 24:46 that says, "Blessed is that servant whom his Lord, when he comes, shall find so doing." We believe this applies to us. We have a work to do and are reminded of it every Sabbath by the words emblazoned on our church seal, preaching the gospel, preparing a people. As we have tracked this increasing rate of growth in income, the Council has authorized substantially increased spending in our public proclamation efforts. Piece by piece, we have added to our media spending whenever discretionary money was available, an increase of $100,000 near the end of fiscal year 2005-2006. An additional $531,000 was authorized in December 2006, and the Council of Elders has requested an increase of $1.65 million for the upcoming fiscal year. Altogether, an increase of $2,281,000. We are a growing church with growing needs. While we realize that growth has not yet shown itself in greatly increased numbers of new people coming into our church, it has shown itself in a steady, growing number of donors and co-workers. Today there are over 12,000 donors and co-workers, far more donors and co-workers than adult members of the United Church of God, and their number grows every day of every month. How do we then prepare to take care of present and future growth? At the Home Office, we currently have filled all available office space and have several employees working from home. In our ongoing training efforts, we cannot host all of our meetings and training sessions without renting additional meeting space from local hotels. We have reached maximum capacity in our warehouse and mailing facilities as well. This is where we are today. One of our current strategic needs is to train capable ministers to replace our current aging ministry and provide pastors for future church growth. Just to keep up with the replacement of aging, retiring ministers over the next 5 to 10 years, we need to increase the number of men being trained for the ministry and the length of time dedicated to their training. ABC, while a great blessing to a steady stream of young church members, would be an even more valuable experience if students could live in a campus setting during their time at ABC. To meet these and other needs, the president and staff have proposed that we must either expand the Home Office building or relocate. After careful consideration of the facts, the Council of Elders did not believe the expansion of our current building was in our best interest, as it would only solve part of our growth problem, and only for a temporary period of time. It further would leave the current home office building a cobbled structure, eventually more difficult to sell. Based upon a survey of available building sites within a reasonable commute from the current home office, the Council of Elders believes we cannot afford to build a facility to handle our current and future needs at the price for good building sites in Cincinnati within reasonable commuting distance for our employees. Looking toward the future, the Council of Elders also believes there is a need to move from a single multipurpose building to a campus setting with dedicated buildings for different tasks, office space, warehouse space, meeting and seminar space, and housing for ABC and ministers in training. Moves are never easy. We have to be responsible stewards of the monies God has given us. The Council of Elders now faces an economic issue. Moves, though never easy, have been a part of the fabric of our history, and every major move that followed the establishment of Ambassador College in Pasadena in 1947 was based either in part or whole on the question, how do we use the monies God has given us to do His work? Most of us, with years of experience in the church, have a mobile history. Ambassador College opened its doors in Brickett Wood after years of searching in Europe for a suitable site. In 1960, because of financial assets and a suitable location, the college was started. 14 years later, in 1974, the doors were closed due to tightened finances. Ambassador College in Big Sandy opened its doors in the early 1960s and later closed again for the same reason, financial and economic reasons. Ambassador College in Pasadena, California operated from 1947 until 1990 when the last class graduated. Again, in part, the close was based on economics. Ambassador College moved to Big Sandy. That operation was closed permanently in the mid-1990s, again, due to economics. In most of these instances, our financial state played a major role in the move from one location to another location. While economics have driven decisions in our past, our situation today is far more positive. We moved from Southern California in large part to allow our employees to have a decent standard of living on the wages we could pay, something difficult, if not impossible, to do in Southern California for anyone not already established. The proposal we are putting before the General Conference of Elders would allow for more growth, not declining growth, and allow the employees to maintain the same or better standard of living. As a result of our deliberation on all the matters mentioned above, the Council has unanimously approved a proposal from the President that we ask the General Conference of Elders to approve a relocation of the Home Office. Our proposal to the General Conference will be put before them for a decision at the annual meeting of the General Conference of Elders in May of this year. As I mentioned earlier, we have never seen ourselves as a stagnant, no-growth body. God has given us a work to do, and He expects to see us about that work with energy until He returns. To further elaborate on the spiritual need to grow and to share the physical details of the proposal made to the Council of Elders, I would like to introduce Clyde Kylo, President of the United Church of God.
Greetings, everyone. This is an unusual setting for me, as opposed to most normal Sabbaths, giving a sermon in a recording studio to an audience of about 5 people. But the beauty of our technology today is that it allows us to do such, and so such a message can be given to the entire church at any given time. And I appreciate the opportunity. I appreciate Mr. Dick's introduction as well. In the United Church of God today, and from the day we began, we have held a belief and not just a belief, but a sense of responsibility to a concept expressed in Isaiah chapter 29 and verse 14, where God says, "Behold, I will again do a marvelous work among this people, a marvelous work and a wonder. For the wisdom of their wise men shall perish, and the understanding of their prudent men shall be hidden." We believe that this is a prophecy yet to be fulfilled. The context of this chapter began with Jerusalem itself, and it carries through to a prophecy of a millennial setting. And in the midst of this chapter is this statement about God promising to do a remarkable work. And it is not hard for us to see how this would apply to us today, because the preceding verse describes the state of mind of the people of the world at the time. "Inasmuch as these people draw near to me with their mouths and honor me with their lips, but have removed their hearts far from me, and their fear toward me is taught by the commandment of men." The world is not only misled spiritually, but because we have rejected God, we are on the brink of disintegrating. We cannot figure out how to live our lives. We cannot resolve our problems. We are in a time of moral decay. The Middle East is continually volatile. We're concerned about nuclear arms developments today. Everywhere we look, we have instability. And yet, at the same time, for many people, life just goes on. Isn't that what Christ said, as it was in the days of Noah? They'll be eating and drinking and marrying and giving in marriage, just caught up in the everyday life and oblivious to the danger that exists around them. But God promised that in the middle of that condition, His gospel would be preached in all the world as a witness before the return of Christ. And He has built His church and given it a role to play in carrying out that work. It's not our work. It is God's work. But we are laborers in His field, and we have gladly taken on that responsibility. And we do so gladly because every one of us wants other people to hear and to be given what He brought us to. This is a huge job, however, and the world is a big place. And seeing the enormity of the commission that we have been given very quickly drives us to understand the dependence that we have on God for making it possible to even begin to do a work. The people of God, from the earliest prophets through the early church, continuing on to today, still shoulder that responsibility. No matter how big or how small we may be, we will continue to do that work. If you will turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 3, we find a statement of Paul, the way he viewed it. 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verses 9 through 11. Paul said, "For we are God's fellow workers. You are God's field. You are God's building. According to the grace of God, which was given to me as a wise master builder, I have laid the foundation, and another builds on it. But let each one take heed how he builds on it. For no other foundation can anyone lay than that which is laid, which is Jesus Christ." We are building on a sure foundation. That is a scriptural principle, and it is one that on which we place all of our hope and faith and efforts, that we are on building on a sure foundation, which is Jesus Christ. Let me take you back a few more scriptures to verse 5, where Paul said of himself, "Who then is Paul, and who is Apollos, but ministers through whom you believed, as the Lord gave to each one? I planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the increase. So then neither he who plants is anything, nor he who waters, but God who gives the increase." We are to plant, we are to water, we are to do everything that we can do, but we are to do so with an expectation of God. God will give increase. As we look at our last few years of history, as Mr. Dick was pointing out, God has blessed us in ways beyond our expectations. We have moved from a time of sheer survival and hanging on by a thread to coming to a point where we are being granted greater and greater ability to plant, to water, to seed, and to sow. We don't do that in hopes that something will happen. We do that in expectation that something will happen. We don't scatter seed in hope. We expect that God will give a crop. We do this on faith and full expectation. But he has given us more to plant and water with in recent times. I believe God would consider it faithless not to expect it to produce and grow. We are reaping some very encouraging signs of growth. We have a group of very diligent and hardworking and efficient people up in the mail processing center who are being flooded more and more with responses that they have to process. And without them, not a piece of literature would go out of this building to go to people who are requesting. But recently, we had to hire 3 more employees to work part-time to help pick up the load that was being put on them. And now we are gearing up for a huge surge in responses that are going to be generated by some of these ads. Let me show one of them to you. This is the marriage and family ad that will be going into Parents Magazine and American Baby Magazine in April and May. The big one is going to go into Reader's Digest. And we know that once that April edition comes out, we are going to have a lot of responses. How many? Oh, we don't know. I hope we are so overrun we have to get more help. That's our hope. I hope that every one of God's people will be making it a part of their daily prayers in the next few weeks, that people will see those ads and that something will click, something will be moved in their minds to respond and to want to send for this literature so that they will hear some aspect of the gospel, whether it's the Middle East and prophecy that we will be advertising in Reader's Digest or something that will appeal to young families in American Baby and parenting, to help them begin to get some security in their thinking and the way that they can live their lives out of concern for their families and loved ones. Whatever it is that helps people connect to the gospel message, I hope that we are praying every day for God to lay it on the hearts and minds of more people to respond. They need this. If we do, God responds to people who respond to him. Christ said to pray for laborers, and they come in many ways to do many jobs. But when our hearts are in God's work, he will continue to bless our efforts. But when we plant, when we do these things, again, we come back to the expectation that when God is going to do a work, there will be results. We are in really an early time of our history comparatively in our recent years in the United Church of God and being able to really begin sowing. We've been working on laying a foundation. We have been sowing, but now we are ready to sow more. Sometimes if you are driving in the country in the time when the farmers are planting, and if you look out over a field, you don't see individual plants, but you begin to see those tender shoots coming up. You begin to see the growth that is eventually going to bear fruit that will be harvested. And as you look out over a field, I've done this many times, you see not individual plants, but you see a green haze of the newly emerging crop. And yet you realize that to have that, this is not a job for the lazy. There's a lot of tilling, preparing, seeding, fertilizing, weeding, nurturing that crop. But every farmer goes about his work with the expectation of reaping one day. God has called us to do this. He has built a foundation. Paul was part of that in his time. And he said a foundation has been laid. He was part of that. And we will be building on that. We find ourselves at a time in the work when a foundation has been laid. We have a time of stability in many ways. Stable membership, stable ministry, education programs that have begun, ministerial development programs that have begun to take us into the future. God has granted us financial stability and increase and encouragement. Times of building the foundation are times when that's not the glamorous work. Foundations are not the pretty part of the house. You see the sand, you see the rocks, you see the cement that is poured, the pipes and the rebar and all of these things, the base work and the plumbing. And once the building goes up, that foundation is not even seen anymore. But you cannot have a building without it. We've been in a time of building a foundation. And as we use the word stable so often today for the grateful position of the church that we find, it is stable because a foundation has been built. But now God has given us the means to do more. We have seen increases in income. And now we are at a point of having to ask, what do we do? How do we fulfill the responsibility to be good stewards of that income? What does God expect us to do? You know, it's easy to budget when you don't have much money. When all of your expenses are already taken up by the day you get your paycheck, it's not hard to say where it goes. But when you have more than what your base expenses are, then you have to make decisions about how to spend that money. It's true in a home, and it's true in a church. God has blessed us, and we are now having to make decisions not only on what we will do, but will we have the capacity with what we have currently to fill the needs of the future? It has brought us to a point of decision-making for our future. We have a simple expectation that we can go on faith, but not blind faith. Not blind faith that is rash or without basis, but on faith that God is going to provide more for us, and the basis for that faith is because He is providing already. God has been providing in a very generous way. But we must be a people who have faith to do what He says to do and go about our Father's business in faith and confidence. In Isaiah chapter 28, we read, "Thus says the Lord God, Behold, I lay in Zion for a foundation, a stone, a tried stone, a precious stone, a sure foundation. He that believes shall not make haste," King James says. It is a sure foundation, one that will never give way, a rock on which the church is built. The gates of hell will not prevail against it, Christ said, because He is the rock. He is the foundation, the chief cornerstone. The gates of hell will assault the church. They have assaulted the church, and they will again in the future. But we have seen many times in the church's history when times of growth came on the heels following times of assault. And who are we to say that that will not happen again? We expect it to happen. He makes the statement, "He that believes shall not make haste." Some versions render this, "shall not be ashamed." And when Peter referred to this verse in 1 Peter 2:6, he said, "Therefore also it is contained in Scripture, Behold, I lay in Zion a chief cornerstone, elect, precious, and he who believes on Him shall never be ashamed." We don't want to be ashamed. We don't want to have to answer to God for the lack of work or the lack of faith or the lack of effort that we might have put forward to doing what He has given us to do. I'll come to that in a few minutes in the parable of the talents in Matthew 25. But let's refer now, remind ourselves of what is stated in Ephesians chapter 2. When again we base everything that we are doing upon the foundation that this church is built upon. In Ephesians chapter 2, in verse 19, we read, "Now therefore you are no longer strangers and foreigners, but fellow citizens with the saints and members of the household of God." No matter where we are around this world, no matter how scattered, we are all called with a common faith and purpose, having been built on the foundation of the apostles and prophets, Jesus Christ Himself being the chief cornerstone. We have a sure foundation. We are confident in our foundation. We are not rooted in some historical church fathers. We are not rooted in a reformation that took place a few hundred years ago. We are the first century church in the 21st century today. We have given our lives to that. And we know that with that foundation, the gates of hell will never prevail. Jesus Christ, the chief cornerstone. Peter wrote that we are coming as unto a living stone, referring to Him, disallowed by men, but chosen of God. Peter said, we also are living stones, built up a spiritual house, a holy priesthood, to offer spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God. Paul continues in Ephesians 2:21, in whom the whole building, being joined together, grows into a holy temple in the Lord, in whom you are also being built together for a habitation of God in the Spirit. Some translations view verse 21 as is growing. In other words, it's an ongoing living organism. Not just a building, but we are living stones, growing into a spiritual house. Growth is simply inherent in the way of God. That's part of His nature. We are told to understand the invisible attributes by looking at the world around us. In every living aspect of His creation, we can see that it is designed to grow. We are told that spiritually, we are created to grow. The kingdom of God will grow. His word will not return empty. There are so many statements that focus on this principle that tell us there is no room for the idea of stagnation. We cannot afford to be lukewarm. We have a job to be about. The foundation gives us the stability of what we do. When a foundation is built, it is intended for something else to be built upon it. The strength of the church will always be found in its spiritual condition. If it is spiritually stable, if it is spiritually growing, if it is becoming more and more deeply converted, it will be strong. If not, it will crumble. It cannot survive from that dry rot that would come from a lack of spiritual growth. But if those factors are present, if there is spiritual stability, spiritual growth, deep conversion, zeal for doing the work of God, then we should expect more than just a foundation to be built. And we do expect more. So we look back on our past 10 years as a time of building a foundation. We have a tremendous literature foundation. We have a foundation now for preaching the gospel that is being refined and perfected. And doors are going to open for us. And so we are going to be ready to build on that, and we expect growth because of the sure things that God has given us. It's interesting just to look up the word sure in the Bible. We find so many confirming concepts. The testimony of the Lord is sure. His testimonies are sure. Paul wrote in 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 19, "Nevertheless, the foundation of God stands sure." Having this seal, commentaries will tell you that the seal was an impression made. It was an inscription. And he says there is an inscription, there's a seal on this foundation, and it has two sayings. Number one, the Lord knows those who are His. And let everyone who names the name of Christ depart from iniquity. That's interesting, isn't it? On that foundation that is sure, we have those inscriptions. God knows who enters His building. He knows the sheep and the goats. He knows those who are His. And His sheep hear His voice. And those who name the name of Christ will depart from iniquity. The Passover and the days of unleavened bread are just around the corner, and our minds become focused on this need to respond to the sacrifice of Christ with a wholehearted dedication to depart from iniquity. And with the people who are built on a foundation, who are His and who are enjoined in His work and who are committed to living the right life by departing from iniquity, God will build upon that. So we work in the belief and have from the beginning that this is right, it's our responsibility, and God's promise will be fulfilled. He will open doors that no man will shut, and He can and He will do a work that is far beyond the combined ability of all of us put together that we can muster, because it will be something that He will do, He will generate, and He will provide. This is His house. And unless the Lord builds the house, we labor in vain. But when the Lord builds the house, you can expect growth and progress. What our job to do is to meet with God and have His direction and make sure we are seeking His will and His guidance. So we look at trends now and the increase of what God has given us. And we have decisions to make. There's another principle that rings very clear that comes naturally along behind what I've just laid out to you. And that is that God expects what He has given us to be used in such a way that it will produce more. That's a responsibility that we all bear as stewards, to seek the wisdom to know what to do in the most effective way possible, to ask God to lead us according to His will. We cannot strike out with our own determination in mind. We will find ourselves going astray. But on the other hand, when we collectively seek God's guidance and we face situations and decisions, we can know with surety that He will take us in the right direction. We have had upswings in the growth of the church financially. Christ said, where your treasure is, your heart will be also. Treasure is not of itself spiritual stability, but Christ did say it is a barometer, it's something to look at, because it's just part of human nature. We put our treasure in whatever ways it is. It's not just financial. We put our time, our energy, our devotion into things that are of our heart. I believe a great part of our increase in the income has simply come from God's people being dedicated and responding to Him with their whole hearts. But we are not in survival mode anymore. We were at one time, but not anymore. And now we find ourselves with the responsibility to make plans for the future. There's a parable that weighs heavily in this regard that tells us that we cannot be sluggards, we cannot be careless in this. Matthew chapter 25, beginning in verse 13, on the heels of a parable of the 10 virgins, Jesus said, "Watch therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour in which the Son of Man is coming." This is on our minds a lot, to watch ourselves, to watch the world, to be living our lives standing in the shadow of the kingdom of God and knowing that it is coming, being alert. But he went on to draw another parable. It was very instructive. "For the kingdom of heaven is like a man traveling to a far country who called his own servants and delivered his goods to them." We understand very clearly that he is saying that this kingdom of God that is going to come, that the head of that kingdom is going to deliver goods, and he's going to be gone for a while. He went on a journey. It says in verse 15, "To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, to each according to his own ability, and immediately he went on a journey." Christ did not leave his church. He is with it continually, but he isn't around physically, walking with us, sitting in the office every day, participating in person in these things. He is on his journey, waiting and abiding his time till the time is right for him to return. But in the meantime, we have been given goods. The parable of the talents tells us about goods committed to 3 servants. It's interesting. The parable that precedes it has to do with a state of mind. The parable of the virgins has to do with a state of mind, showing the need to be prepared. The parable of the talents talks about the state of working, what we are doing in the meantime, what we are stirred to do, and how we will be laying out ourselves for the service of God. The virgins are represented as waiting for God. The servants are represented as working for God. The internal life and spiritual condition and the external activity. So the master divided to them his goods. He appointed them. We've been talking in metaphorical terms lately, and you will see this in another DVD that is going out to the General Conference of Elders, the comparison of capital development. Capital is necessary for doing a work of any kind, and essentially what it means is the resources that you have and are used, that you can use to produce even more resources in the future. I read this parable of the talents and simply see in this the same analogy, that God gave them resources with the expectation that they would use it to produce even more. Capital can be financial, it can be income, of course. Capital can be buildings, your physical things that you have, equipment. The most important capital is the human resources that we have. When we have a group of spiritually, biblically educated, organized, dedicated employees and workers and members around the world, that is the core capital. All of these areas have to be developed, whether individually as humans, or whether the physical plant, or whether the income that we use. All three are interwoven, and all three are necessary for using in the right way and developing in the right way so that more can be done in the future. We have to consider how we invest in the talents that God has given us for even greater output in the future. It is not just for what we bear now. It is investing in the future of the church. As we look back on the modern history of the church in the last number of decades, we see that God inspired and led and blessed Mr. Armstrong to do that in so many ways. He had vision from the earliest days that was far beyond the physical capacity and means that he had at his disposal at any given time. But he had the belief that if we did the right things, that God would increase and bless the work. And he did. And we were trained. And institutions were formed and built that would train others in various ways, whether educational institutions or media production institutions. Things were done in ways that directly affected our lives. For most of us in the United Church of God today, we were trained and helped, developed, either directly by him or by those whom he taught, or simply in the institutions he founded, whether it's the general membership of the church today, the pastoral ministry, home office staff, media staff, council of elders. We had a lot of our capital development, humanly speaking, based in those institutions and training times that he gave. Now, any institution, including the church, can live for a while off of its capital. For a while, even consuming it, but it cannot fail to replenish it. We are living off of the capital established many decades ago, but we must be about the job of restoring capital, and we must know what to do. And again, we come back to some underlying assumptions. Number one, there is still a great work to do. Number two, we must have the means, the capacity, in order to do it, whether it's human or physical. And number three, we don't have time to waste in building that infrastructure. These things come to mind as we look at this parable. He gave to one five, another two, another one, each according to his several ability. We have different ways of serving. We have different roles to play, but God has placed each one of us in the body as it pleased him. We all have a part to do. And so he took his journey. As a work of God in the modern era, it doesn't matter how big a work we were at one time, or how big we are now, or how big we will be. It doesn't matter how much we were given. We are simply expected to take what we've been given and make it produce more. And so he who had received five went and traded with them and made another five. And likewise he who had received two gained two also. They were diligent. They were faithful. They went. They traded. They put the money to work that they were entrusted with. They laid it out in goods in some manner, but they made product of it. As soon as their master was gone, they applied themselves to his business. A true servant of God is one who has voluntarily chosen to serve God, and then he dedicates his life from then on, takes pains to learn the way of God, studies that way of God, integrates it into his life, and then lays out what he has for the benefit of it, to make it advance, and to help influence others with it. And so they doubled what they had been given. In verse 18, though, there was one who had received one talent, and he went and dug in the ground and hid his Lord's money. He did not misspend it, did not embezzle it, didn't squander it. He just sat on it. He just hid it. After a long time, the Lord of those servants came and settled accounts with them. There will come a time. We did not read that part in 1 Corinthians 3, but Paul said everyone needs to take heed how he builds on the foundation, because there will be a time of accounting for what God has called us to do for each one of us. We want to be able to stand before him and have no reservations. As they say in athletics and sports, you leave it all on the field. By the time the game is over, you can look back and say, I gave it everything that I had. That has to be the nature of following God for each one of us. It's the only way to live. So he came to settle accounts. He who had received 5 talents came and brought 5 other talents, saying, Lord, you delivered to me 5 talents. Look, I have gained 5 more talents besides them. What a beautiful way to be able to answer. When we read about having boldness in the day of judgment, this is a very good application. In 1 John 4:17, it says, in this our love is made perfect, that we may have boldness in the day of judgment, so that as he is, so also are we in this world. That's where our boldness in the day of judgment comes from, to say as you are, that's the way we were in this world. In 1 John 2:28, it says, now little children, abide in him, so that when he is revealed, we may have confidence and not be ashamed before him in his coming. We want to be able to look back and say we gave everything that we had in our being to see that your work was done. This is the most important work on earth that is going on right now. The work of God, the preaching of the gospel, the preparing of his people. And so the one came and said, here, I have doubled this. His Lord said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. You were faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord. Again, a powerful statement. These are the only words we want to hear when Christ returns. You made this possible. And God responds. This servant said, Lord, you delivered to me this. We must never lose sight of that. Everything we have in our being to do anything in the work of God is because God delivered it to us. We didn't generate it. We don't have the means. We don't have the strength. But we do have God behind us. And what he delivers to us, we must never look upon it with self-interest or self-congratulation or the sense that my hand has built this, as God warned the Israelites. The more we can do in God's work, the more we are indebted to him for making it possible for us and enabling us to serve in this way. The second came, and he had received 2 talents, came and said, Lord, you delivered to me. Again, acknowledging where it came from. You delivered to me 2 talents, and look, I've gained 2 more talents beside them. He gave his account as cheerfully as the one who had 5. It's according to our faithfulness, not our ability, that God is judging. It's according to our sincerity, not how relatively successful we are compared to someone else. God is looking on our hearts, not how many opportunities we have. This is the equity and the fairness of God. His Lord said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord. These are people who labor in service to God, as Jesus Christ did. Jesus, we are told in Hebrews 12:2, we are told to look to him who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame. There are times in life that are tough. There are crosses we bear. There are sometimes shames that we endure. But we go on doing the work of God because we look to the joy that is set before us, knowing what God is promising. Our sure foundation is not just what is in the past. Our sure foundation is the joy that is set before us in the future, and simply knowing that God will honor and respond to and reward the hard, dedicated work of His people. When the chief shepherd shall appear, you will receive a never-ending crown of glory. Well, this is a powerful lesson to those who respond and who build the capital that God has given them, in whatever form it may be. But then one, he had received one, came and said, "Lord," no mention here that a thankfulness for what God had delivered to him. He was sort of, how would you say it? He was sort of irritated, apparently, by it. It was an onus that was put on his shoulders. He wasn't glad to bear it. He said, "Lord, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed." Now, he makes an assumption and he says, "I knew you," but he really didn't. If he knew God, he would not see him in this light. He would understand the full nature, the compassion, the love that God has for his people. But he says, "I was afraid and went and hid your talent in the ground. And look, well, here's what is yours." There's a lot of ignorance about God. We read that earlier in Isaiah. Their fear toward him is taught by the precepts of men, not by God himself, and not found in their relationship with God. But someone living in a state of mind that characterizes God in an unfair and untruthful way. And as a result, they don't live on faith. They don't live with a dedication. They are simply there surviving. So even though he only had one, it wasn't a matter that he had one compared to five or two. He is not excused from a reckoning. He had to give account for what he had. So he came up with excuses. "Here's what you have. I didn't lose anything. I'm just glad to turn back over to you what you gave to me." He rationalized it. Proverbs 26:16 says, "The sluggard is wiser in his own conceit than seven men can render a reason." It's human nature to come up with rationalizing, justifying. But this was, God was expecting more. God wanted more. So he comes up with all of these reasons of why he could not perform what should not have been a very difficult task. "I was afraid." That's not the spirit of a servant of God, to be afraid. God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. That's part of our sure foundation as well, to know that when we collectively go before God, He will take us and guide us in the way that is sound, because His mind will guide and direct our actions. And so his Lord answered and said to him, "You wicked and lazy servant. You wicked and lazy servant." There are two things he's convicted of. One is slothfulness. His wickedness lie in his slothfulness. He was slothful in his work. Proverbs 18:9 says, "He who is slack in his work is brother to a great destroyer." He who is slack in his work. We know that when people sleep, the enemy sows tares. These are things that we have to be concerned about. So he was slothful. He took no pains to improve his spiritual knowledge. He neglected the gift that was in him. He did not stir it up. He was not studying to show himself approved, not to be ashamed as a workman. He did not give himself to reading, meditation, and prayer. All of these things that we find that go into the hearts and the lives of dedicated servants of God. His second problem was self-contradiction, and this was pointed out by the master. "If you knew, you say you knew this, then at least you should have done something with it. If you say that I reap where I have not sown, it doesn't make sense to have been afraid. It seems like you would have made more effort to go out and produce something." No, it was just rationalizing and excusing. And there is an ashamed state that exists then at the time of accounting. In verse 28, we find the conclusion of the matter. Jesus said, "Therefore, take the talent from him and give it to him who has 10. For to everyone who has, more will be given." because they have shown that they're going to produce something. They're going to develop the capital so that whatever God gives will produce even more. And he will have abundance. But from him who does not have, even what he has will be taken away. And cast the unprofitable servant into the outer darkness, there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Those who are diligent in improving the opportunities they have, God will enlarge them. You read of the Philadelphian era of the church. In Revelation chapter 3, verse 7, these things say he that is holy, he that is true, he that has the key of David, he that opens and no man shuts, and shuts and no man opens. He who is the foundation of this church will do things that no human can. I know your works, he said. Behold, I have set before you an open door, and no man can shut it. For you have a little strength, and have kept my word, have not denied my name. It doesn't matter that the humans have a little strength. They have not denied his word. If they have kept his word, not denied his name, rather, he said, I will open doors. Because he will respond to those who are doing everything they can to follow him. And so the reckoning takes place. As we think about decisions that we have to make in the church of God, these are the principles that we fall back on, building on a sure foundation. We are not in survival mode. We are not just holding on. We're not hunkering down and just waiting for the end to come. We have to be about our Father's business. We have to be found so doing. But we have decisions to make, and we have to take what God has blessed us with and use that in the right and proper way. These are big decisions. One of the decisions we face at this time concerns the operations center for the church. It is a real, tangible challenge that we face. We have been blessed, again, so much to be here. God brought us to a place back in 1998. We look back and say we landed in a place here in Cincinnati that gave us a chance to stabilize, to be in a solid area with a lot of church members who would be able to integrate right into the work of the home office. And it was such a blessing. And then unexpectedly, as we moved from leased facilities into a larger facility here on top of this hill on the outskirts of Milford, 8 little acres, 5 of which are usable, God blessed us with a plant, a physical building in which we could do a more effective work. But now we have operation needs for the future. The operation center must be a place that can provide well for the preaching of the gospel to the world, and it must be a place that can provide well for the preparing of a people and a tool that supplies the needs of the member and ministerial and congregational growth of the church in both the national and international presence. Everything that is done internationally is supported to one degree or another here at the home office. We have needs in the future. In the preaching of the gospel, we have needs for developing manpower, adding personnel. And in order to add them, some will have to be developed professionally and skill upgrading. Talent is there, but for every job that we have, we always have to find better ways to do it. We have to have the resources to process and the space to process what is needed in the workload. We are going to be pouring money into media as we never have before, and it's going to put strains on our manpower and personnel to fulfill it. When we consider the aspect of preparing a people, within the next 10 years, we will need to replace approximately 50% of the ministry due to age and retirement. We need to have a training program. In fact, we have the seeds of the program. We have the foundation of it already. But we have to have the capacity to do it in the right way, an economical way, and a way that provides the right facilities for doing it. For international ministers, for continuing education for those that we have, and for those who will be called in ministerial development. These needs are all over. As I responded or referred to earlier about the capital developed in the early days, most of our capital development, if you will, in terms of ministerial education was done through Ambassador College. We see God calling younger people today to service in His ministry who never had that opportunity, and they will need the chance to add to and solidify their biblical base. We have the program through Ambassador Bible Center. We don't have the means right now to do that. There will be needs for training the ministry internationally to bring them into the office so that they can have more than just a few days of a seminar, so that they can have the extended training that we can offer to help them develop their skills and their expertise and their understanding in order to serve God's people more effectively around the world. The ABC program was visionary, and its fruits have been well seen, and yet there is an unrealized potential that ABC has in order to really go to the next level of effectiveness. Time and experience has convinced us that we need to create an atmosphere at ABC that is more conducive not just to learning the Word of God, but to applying it and to developing the character of God in a 24-hour environment that your environment adds to and creates. We have in the United Church of God approximately 3,000 young people between the ages of 13 and 30, and we have hundreds of preteens. For the long foreseeable future, we see a need to provide an educational tool for more and more young people, not just the 50 to 60 that we have currently. We need to transition to a bit longer program, at least a 9-month program. And we need to create an environment that we believe on-site housing becomes a critical aspect of that. We cannot be just a commuter school where young people drive in and drive out, go to a few classes, then they go back to scattered locales. There is such a great benefit, just like we find in our summer camp program, of having a zone created that is part of an entire environment that involves work, classes, dorm life, clubs, social activities, service activities, where you are immersed in an environment that helps you assimilate and integrate the things that you are learning. We are of the unanimous conclusion, those who work at ABC, that we need this opportunity to really have it bear the fruits that we would like to see it bear. In addition, we need other education programs that can be best coordinated from the home office. Focused education, marriage retreats and seminars, women's, men's, singles, young adults programs, including seminars and weekends. All the things that can be done if you have the right facility. Right now, we simply don't. We have maximized the facility that we have. Our offices are taken. After looking at many facts and figures and research, the Council of Elders has concluded that expanding this facility is not the most viable. It's not the best option. It will only be for a while, if we can. And someday, we will be back at the drawing board, even if we expand it. We will be back here saying, well, what do we do now? And even if we expand it, it does not provide some of the other needs that we have. So we have an option to either buy or build somewhere else. We have looked and looked. You will be able to see all of the research that went into this, and through the directive of the council to do a study on this, and then coming back with that study, looking at all of the options that we have, and these will be laid out to you. You will have opportunity to see them in a special presentation that is about a 2-hour presentation being sent to all of the elders of the General Conference and will be made available to all church members to view. We lay out the needs, the options, the recommendations, and the rationale that we are putting forward. The conclusion that we have come to that we are going to ask the General Conference of Elders in May at the upcoming meeting, our annual meeting, to approve the move of a home office from Cincinnati to the greater Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex by the year 2010. This is a big move. It's a big decision. But it is one that, as you will see, as you have the time to view all of the statistics, the facts, the research, what opportunities it opens to us, it allows us to make a plan for the long-term future. It is not just addressing our needs now, we will be endowing the next generation of the church. It will provide the opportunity to do more than ever with the resources that we are given. And when God gives us those resources, as He is doing His work, we believe it is incumbent upon us to do whatever needs to be done in order to position ourselves so that those resources will bear more resources and bear more fruit. This is a big decision. I find it an exciting opportunity. I have moved personally along with many of us here from simply thinking about expansion, and that would be our only option, to asking the question, is that really the answer? Does that really solve our problem? And then as we expanded the search to see what other options exist. And you will be able to see all of this. This is not the time and the place to go into all of the details for you, but we do ask that every pastor will be able to set up a time and a place that every church member will be able, if you are interested, to see this presentation. And I hope that every one of you will do so, because it's about the future of the church. We are not in survival mode anymore. We are ready to go forward. And the reason, again, why we do that and why we believe that God will provide is because simply we look at the fact that He has provided, He is providing, and we have to ask Him, where do you want us to go next? It is a big decision. Obviously, I ask that you join with all of us in fervent prayer for God's guidance. We don't want to try to push open a door that He is not opening, but we do want to have the clarity of mind to recognize that if He is opening a door, to see it, to understand it, and to be able to walk through with confidence and faith and to follow His lead. That is our prayer, and we ask that you join with us in that, and that we will take the right step as we go about doing our Father's business and doing our part to build on a sure foundation.